Hi, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Universal Narratives podcast. In the last two episodes, we learned about the impact of the pandemic on education in Saudi Arabia from the perspective of educators in the non-for-profit field. As promised, today we will be speaking to a school administrator in Saudi Arabia in order to get an insider view of how the pandemic affected teaching and learning in Jeddah, KSA. This will also help us look at an example of how school administration responded to the pandemic. I'm happy to welcome Ms. Nariman Essawi to our podcast today so that we would learn more about this topic. Welcome to our podcast, Nariman.
Hello, welcome. Welcome, Salma.
Thank you so much for your time. Can you please maybe start by telling us more about your background and your experience so that our audience would learn more about where you come from and what you do?
Yes, of course, I'd be happy to do so. But first, I have to thank you for allowing this opportunity reaching me. And I also thank Universal Narratives, the purposeful website for the services it's going to offer. I have a bachelor's degree in English literature and linguistics from King Abdulaziz University. And I also hold the postgraduate degree in education from Sunderland University in UK. Okay. And I've earned a lot of certificates, you know, in the middle related to teaching and education and leadership as well. I have a diploma from CRESTCOM, Leaders of the World in leadership and management. In total, I have 28 years of experience.
Wow.
I've worked, yeah, and still going, inshallah. I've worked as a department head. After, of course, I started as a teacher and then I occupied several positions in the same field, education, as a department head in schools and then a principal and a professional development trainer and currently the head of the English department in Dar al-Hanan School.
Great. Very, very good to hear about your experience. So, do you want to tell us more about the kind of schools that you have worked previously? I know you're working in a private school now, a Saudi private school, but do you want to tell us more about like your previous school experiences, what kind of schools you worked in the past?
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. Maybe it's worth telling that I have occupied the position of the president of the Parent Teacher Student Association in the American School of Jeddah for 2 years, and that was a nonprofit position. Okay. Where I served the community of the school. And of course, the international AISJ is an international school. In Jeddah, and I've worked also in national schools, which is similar to Dar al-Hanan. Yes. And also I worked in a school that offers the American diploma system or program.
Great. So national, private, international. Great.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay. So my first question to you today would be, we're focusing on the pandemic and how it has affected education, particularly teaching and learning everywhere around the world. And in our previous episodes, as I mentioned earlier, we spoke to educators in the non-for-profit field. Today, I promised that we're gonna, you know, talk to somebody who is in the school administration itself so that we would learn more about the impact of the pandemic. So how has the pandemic impacted the school that you work right now?
Well, actually, the pandemic impacted the school where I work and many schools, or actually all schools, especially in the private sector. Financially, for example, we lost a lot of students who decided to withdraw from the school and join the government schools because there's no point of, you know, attending a school virtually and losing the facilities and the properties or the maybe rich environment of the other types of schools. Mm-hmm. Technically also, if we look at the positive side, the pandemic improved or helped schools improve their systems. For example, digitally, okay, yes. So they did a lot of upgrading and development in their systems as well. Also, another positive point, I like to focus on positive aspects most of the time. Yeah. Practically, parents' involvement have gotten so much better, really, with the, you know, pandemic conditions that happened.
Yeah. I believe it's, I mentioned in previous episodes that it's very similar in New York as well, like how many parents started to, you know, think about the public school option. Like, there is no point in sending your children to private schools and paying the tuition when you're not enjoying the facilities, mm-hmm. and you're not really getting the specialized services that you usually get and the resources mm-hmm. that they usually get in a private school, which mm-hmm. was kind of challenging for some of the small private schools that, mm-hmm. you know, mainly rely on tuition to survive. And so it was a very like moral decision for parents to make, should we send our kids to private schools and support mm-hmm. the schools, or should we take them to public schools? And, you know, it's still an issue going on right now because we're not sure what's going to happen next year.
But exactly.
We're hoping schools will reopen again in September. Mm-hmm. But until then, it's a topic that everybody still talks about. So what kind of challenges have you faced initially as an educator when the pandemic started?
Well, actually, when we first think of challenges, the first thing that comes to our mind is communication at yeah. all levels. You know, communication was really a big issue to reach students, parents, and even to, you know, keep the level of coordination and, you know, correspondence at a high quality or at least a sufficient quality to make sure things are going well. This was a big issue. Also, assessing students at the beginning, especially of the pandemic, when schools were not so ready and the teachers were not well trained to use the digital tools to make sure the assessment is going well and it's happening in the way it should be. It was a big issue as well. Also, collecting students' work was one of the challenges. Well, for teachers to, you know, keep track of students' work and file them, and you know, measuring or collecting data about students when you don't see them or they submit at different times. So it was really a big challenge.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think assessment, I work with teacher educators. I'm a teacher educator, so I work with teachers here in New York. And, you know, the idea of assessment is always an issue. How do you make sure that you're collecting enough data to support, so that you would have evidence about student performance and to say that my students were able to achieve their learning objectives? Do I have enough data or not? So assessment, communication is a very, very interesting point that I would like to maybe delve deeper into. How did you as a school administrator tackle the idea of communication and facilitate it with parents? Because communication is key. And it was very difficult in the beginning to communicate with parents, teachers, families, stakeholders as well, the government, to make sure that you have all the information that everybody is looking for. So how, as a school administrator, you focused on this idea of communication and facilitate communication with all these different parties?
Well, honestly, I'll speak about the internal operations. For example, administration members met occasionally or actually regularly face-to-face in school, especially when there was no lockdown. We used to go to the school and make sure, you know, operations are you know, happening or running smoothly. Nothing is interrupted. And we also agreed on and took, important decisions regarding communication, and we increased the letters, for example, and recorded videos and tutorials. We used a lot of channels as well to reach parents and students. We started with the informal channels like WhatsApp. We created groups of WhatsApp and on Telegram. We did all what we can because we wanted even, you know, parents and students not to panic, because it was completely sudden and it was really hard, and we wanted everything to go smooth. Everyone was, you know, initiating ideas, and we met a lot. The school, staff members met a lot virtually most of the time, and sometimes face-to-face when needed. So we started with every channel possible, as I told you, and we increased the letters, the communication letters, like notifications, for example. We communicated rules, timings, even parent-teacher conferences. We did the first, actually, parent-teacher conference. We insisted to have it face-to-face. There was no lockdown at that time, and we of course made sure the regulations, the safety measures are well maintained, and we had a face-to-face parent-teacher conference, and this was really helpful relieve the parents from panic, and we made sure that everything is clear to them. As I told you, we issued a lot of tutorials on how to use the digital resources and the school's platform, for example. So it went, alhamdulillah, yani, from the very hard to getting to become smoother by time.
That's great.
In terms of communication.
Yeah, I think there is a lot to learn from in this experience. So many plan Bs that we're going to have in the future in case something like this happens again. First round, some schools and some governments, depending on how schools operate in each country, were not prepared to respond to the pandemic.
Sudden, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I think everybody learned a lesson about the importance of being prepared for similar situations if they happen in the future.
Yes.
So you spoke about the school and the administration. Now I want you to shift and think about students and parents. What kind of concerns have you heard from students and parents following the pandemic, when the pandemic first started? What was their biggest concerns, parents and students?
When it started initially, of course, the biggest concern from parents and students was finding material on the digital platform. Mm-hmm. They are not used to, digging into technology and using digital platforms so fully in the way we used it all of a sudden. So this was the biggest concern, parents and students as well. And of course, when we talk about elementary students or younger students, actually we were dealing mostly with parents, because they were, supporting and helping at home and doing most of the, work on their devices. Mm. Also, the stability of internet at homes differed from one student to another. This was another concern, and it interrupted, learning so much and a great deal, until people came to realize that they have to do something, because they cannot start the new academic year, which is the current one we are in now, in the same bad conditions in terms of internet stability. Mm. Also, another concern was the loss of motivation of students as well. And even parents complained of this as well. Not only teachers noticed that they were losing motivation, because this is a big change that happened to them suddenly. They started, losing motivation and getting bored, and they wanted social interaction, which is a crucial part of their development and growth. Yes. So it was a great concern. Also, the fact that some students tend to be conservative during live classes, although they know, for example, the answers, or they are knowledgeable, but they prefer to keep their cameras off and the sound of the audio off as well. Yani, this was really a concern by parents, because, for example, of course, this yani caused the marks of the students to drop. And the parents said, for example, no, they were attending, they were there, okay, but they were not interacting. So it was kind of a dilemma between the teachers and the students and the parents. It was a bit of a struggle. Also, students struggled in organizing studied material. They, before the pandemic, in the normal school setting, they had copybooks, they had handouts, files, textbooks, notes, worksheets, and now everything is just has changed dramatically. So they really suffered in how to file things and how do they organize the material they have to refer back to when they have a quiz or any assessment. So some was kept in as hard copy with in their hands when they took notes, if they do take notes, or some others are kept on the digital library. So it was really a big hassle.
Totally agree. And it's not only because I'm an educator, but also because I'm a mother. And I see, like, with my first grader, like, sometimes you have to track where the homework is in order to send it to your teacher. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's, they're not always using the right notebook to take notes, for example. They're not always writing their homework in the correct notebook. And it becomes very difficult to kind of go over what they have learned so far and put everything together. Mm-hmm. Makes it challenging for the child, for the parent, and also for the teachers. And you have to have a very strong system in place to make sure that everything is organized in such a way. It takes a lot of work on the side of the students and the parents, as well as the teacher, to make sure that everything is in the same place so that the students can go back to the materials and review it whenever needed. Very
exactly.
The more I speak to educators, the more I realize that these issues are universal. They're everywhere. Everybody is struggling with having students participate and feel engaged in class. And everybody is struggling with students not always feeling comfortable putting on their camera or speaking in class. And everybody, all teachers and all school administrators, are trying to find solutions for engaging students and making sure that everybody is fully engaged, and also assessing students in ways that are comfortable for them, because not everybody is comfortable speaking to a camera. Even us adults, sometimes we don't feel comfortable, participating in a virtual setting.
Sure.
So you can understand how it goes for children as well. So it's a lot of challenges for them. But I think a year into the pandemic, I kind of feel like everybody is becoming a little bit more comfortable with this kind of setting.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you see any difference now compared to a year ago?
Of course, I see a difference in efficiency. I see a difference in, success as well. I can see that people are more comfortable, as you said. They are relaxed and they know what to do. It was just a big change in a very short time. But that's the nature of people, human beings. The change at the beginning is always hard, and then they get used to it and they adapt.
Very true. Very true. Okay, so shifting from students and parents to school leadership again, what kind of support, I would say, does school leadership in your particular school, let's focus on your school to make it specific to your context, in assisting teachers and parents during the pandemic. So you spoke about communication, but how has that developed into a system of support, supporting teachers and supporting parents throughout the past year?
Yeah, the school leadership has a big role in this, actually. Mm-hmm. If we start talking about assisting teachers, we should mention providing logistics and digital facilities and even personnel. The cooperation of different staff members, because teachers are in the screen, you know, teachers are the first people the students deal with mostly. But behind teachers, yeah, there are people backstage, like there are, for example, floor controllers who acted as Zoom controllers, or, you know, virtual classroom controllers. Yeah. And we also there were other people or other staff members, like the social worker, the academic advisors, all of these people were working and were very busy collaborating and working together and communicating to help and support the teachers in their teaching, and then make sure they focus on their, you know, primary role. Yeah. Also, having the school has provided flexible work routines as well to accommodate the needs of their teachers. And we must never forget that teachers are also parents, because yes, they have their kids and they have their families. Mm-hmm. So the school has really provided flexible work routines and timings and facilities, and also providing resources, resources for teacher training and resources as a digital library. For example, we had to provide the teachers with all the tools they need in order to also focus on their teaching and focus on the progress of their students and their achievement.
Yeah.
About assisting or supporting parents and students, leadership played a very important role, for example, in providing communication or facilitating communication channels, as I talked before.
Yeah.
And they allocated a lot of virtual meetings, and they had this open door policy with ready staff members to, you know, receive concerns, complaints, inquiries, everything. And they tried all what they can to address these concerns as fast as possible. And not only that, they also organized and developed a system to also welcome parents who would like to come and meet face to face. There was a system with all the you know, safety regulations taking place. Also, the school leadership or the they provided flexible ways to deal with different matters to support parents and students. Yani there were so many flexible decisions, and not decisions, but maybe routines or actions or action steps that will help the parents in every way possible, and the students as well. Also, whenever the school, for example, received any ministry decisions, they did not keep this secret. Of course, they communicated everything instantly with the parents at different or indifferent through different channels, talking about grading system, awarding system, attendance, everything. Yeah. They actually filtered all the decisions, and they made them, you know, more comprehensive and easy to access by parents and by students. So the whole education process happens smoothly.
Yeah, that's great. Very, very inspiring to learn about how school administration handles the pandemic, mm-hmm. because it's usually like an case by case. And mm-hmm. some schools were very efficient and some schools struggled a little bit in the beginning. But as I mentioned earlier, everybody mm-hmm. seems to be going in the right direction right now. And mm-hmm. everybody is becoming more comfortable with this new teaching mm-hmm. and learning scenario. Okay, so I spoke to previously two other educators in Saudi Arabia who basically focused on professional development for teachers in Saudi Arabia at this time, and how their organization, which was a non-for-profit organization, started offering professional development workshops for teachers during the pandemic. What about your school? Does your school at this time offer any professional development workshops or any kind of events for teachers to participate in order to improve the quality of their teaching during the pandemic?
Mm-hmm. Definitely internally, each department in our school, like for example, the Arabic department, the science department, the IT, the English department, each department on its own facilitates professional training sessions, and also they have the learning communities, the professional learning communities already established in place, and they meet weekly to discuss rising issues and the professional training needs, because every department has its own academic director, as it is the case in the English department as well.
Yes.
Generally, we provide model lessons within our school, where teachers attend and they observe, of course, virtual. Also, we provide post-observation feedback sessions with each teacher individually. We organize peer observation schedules at least twice a year, where teachers observe each other as well. And as I mentioned before, there are also, in addition to the different departmental training, there is a general training or general trainings that happen within the entire school, and they usually address, you know, general topics that are important for all teachers. And it could be face-to-face or sometimes virtual as well. Great. But I have to say that the external training, webinars and conferences that are happening everywhere and in every organization locally and globally are vast, to be honest. And the amount of training sessions that my teachers, for example, in the English department attended since the pandemic started are multiplied by three compared to normal schools.
These are some of the benefits of the pandemic, right?
Yes, yes. And not only that, our curriculum as well, suppliers, they offer training because they all develop their digital tools.
Yes, definitely.
Uh-huh.
That's great. So it's very good to know that professional development has continued happening after the pandemic, and in some cases has also, as you mentioned, increased for some teachers. And I believe, you know, how teachers now are becoming more comfortable teaching in a virtual setting, this is going to transform the way that they teach in the future. They're going to consider so many other new elements in teaching later on after the pandemic hopefully is over. And they're going to try to include some of these elements in their teaching in the future as well. This is what I'm hoping for.
Definitely.
Yes. Okay. So how has this experience being a school administrator, head of the English department during the pandemic, changed you as on the professional level?
Well, I personally actually learned a lot of new tools and techniques.
Okay.
Even the way I measured the dominance of students' voice compared to teachers' voice in class is more clear. Uh-huh. It's clearer. It's much more clearer now to me. And when I'm observing lessons online, for example, I easily pay attention to how much students or the teaching in this class is learner-centered rather than teacher-centered and away from being traditional as well.
Yes.
I have also witnessed new success indicators of the whole education process. it differed from the normal setting when, you know, physical attendance of school, for example, creativity, the online teaching involved a lot of creativity. And also how much students are involved. I mean, we developed ways to see or to measure and to make sure students are involved, although we don't see them most of the time. They are behind their cameras, but you can tell if they are involved or not with using, you know, new technology tools. Also, I could determine if students have learned or not, despite all the challenges of the virtual learning and these or distance learning, but I could still determine whether the students learned or they did not learn. This is something I feel that I am more aware of now. I have grown more patient and sensible as well.
Yeah, it's amazing how you're discussing monitoring students' performance in class and determining if a class is student-centered or teacher-centered. Usually we had like different ways of looking at that. It's much easier when you are in the physical classroom sometimes, but now that you're virtually watching a lesson, you're looking for other elements to check students' involvement and participation. Mm-hmm. And it has kind of improved or widened your scope of what to look for. And I'm hoping, as a school supervisor, I'm a teacher supervisor, you are a supervisor as well, we will transfer these skills with us in the future when we're working again in the classrooms. How do you envision the future of teaching and learning in Saudi Arabia after the pandemic? How do you feel that this experience would change how teaching and learning is being conducted and done in Saudi Arabia?
Well, learning has already been upgraded forever, and there is no going back.
Okay.
What happened and how it evolved and how it improved, we will not get back to where we started. Khalas, it's done. And learning is forced to be learner-centered now. There's no way you can manage an online class if you are traditional. It's not going to happen. It can't continue. And also, the learning process or the 21st century skills will be revised definitely by educators and, you know, researchers. They have to revise them to conform with the pandemic conditions or the similar conditions that potentially may happen in the future. Mm-hmm. Also, teaching skills and success criteria must be upgraded and revised as well in the near future in order to be used efficiently by educators. Also, students must be trained more to be independent and self-reliant.
Yeah.
Students must learn to you know, work independently and organize work or their learning, and must take control of their own learning and progress. This was already there, but I mean, now it's enforced. Mm-hmm. It's so evident, and it's going to be really important. There's no way we step back. And about envisioning future of teachers after the pandemic, I see that digital literacy is a must now. Maybe some teachers survived before the pandemic and they were not so efficient in using computers or technology, or now there's no way. They have to just step away if they are not digitally literate. Also, bilinguality is preferred, actually, because we know that digital tools are mostly in English or in, you know, not only the native language. So I think this is a very important, aspect that teachers of the future must take care of and must be concerned about. Also, continuous professional development and self-learning is important, because the best person to know his or her needs
is the person himself or herself. She knows or he knows what he really needs professionally, how he can or she can improve. So this is a very important aspect. Okay. Only courageous teachers in the future who try new things and take risks will stand out and survive. Others, sadly, will not.
I agree. I really like the idea of autonomy that you brought up on the side of both students and teachers. Yeah. I believe that being a lifelong learner at this time and developing this just passion and love for learning on your own is crucial. Mm. It's very important. As I work with university students, I teach teachers in the university level. And I'm telling you, as a professor myself, I look a lot at a lot of resources online. Even when this pandemic started, I started looking at different platforms, how to utilize Zoom in ways that are more effective with the teachers that I'm working with. So everybody has to be involved in this continuous process of learning in order to develop themselves and make sure that their skills stand out, as you mentioned. And keep in mind also that the students are also doing that. So we cannot be kind of outdated. We have to also be up to date with our skills. Yes. Mm.
Heavily. If you allow me just two more points to add about the future of teachers.
Yes.
Teachers are now more leaders than ever before. And they need to prepare future leaders. This is the vision of the future. Now it's so evident. It's so crucial. The teacher's role is even more critical than before because teachers will maintain balance of ethics, love of learning, bonding, fairness, organizing data and material, a lot of things at the same time. So I'm
just praying for all teachers around the world and in the Arab world and in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it has to be also part of like teacher preparation programs that we kind of change a little bit how teacher education programs are structured so that we would incorporate courses that focus more on teaching during difficult times, at times of crisis, at times of emergency. I think management of teaching and learning has to be also a component, an essential component of any teacher preparation program, lifelong learning, independent learning. All of these are skills that should be incorporated in preparing future teachers and leaders in any country now around the world.
Surely.
So my last question is a question that I ask everybody who comes to this podcast, and it's related specifically to your context, which is Saudi Arabia. What can we learn from the Saudi experience as international educators who are trying to share knowledge? And the whole idea of this podcast is to bring in ideas from everywhere in the world and help educators worldwide listen to these ideas, reflect on them, and benefit from this information sharing so that they can also take some of these ideas to their settings and contexts and try to make a difference. What can we learn from your experience in Saudi Arabia?
There's much to learn, to be honest. First of all, the collaboration of everyone, all organizations, the private and the public organizations, everyone worked together to you know, ensure the best outcome. And the quick action was really outstanding. The supporting the students and, making sure they are motivated and helped at every time is something to really learn and appreciate here in Saudi. Schools work together and they learn from each other. Everyone joined the different digital, websites, and we all helped and supported each other. This is something we learn as well. Bright minds are needed today and tomorrow. And I think this vision was really strong and evident here in Saudi Arabia. Despite all the rapid changes and the things that are happening worldwide, although the challenge was really complex, but people did not, you know, panic. They actually took even earlier steps than many other countries in you know, the decisions regarding establishing systems and digital platforms to support students, to record lessons, and to provide different digital tools to support the learning itself. It was accessible, and even the communication system as well, and the public companies as well, they supported students' learning, and they you know, allowed access, free access for the internet and much more. Perhaps I'm not aware, but I felt that people were really well supported, and students did not take much long in you know, accommodating with the new system and the you know, the rapid changes in their education and learning. It didn't take so long for this adaptation to happen.
So the promptness basically is what you're highlighting in the Saudi experience, how promptly they responded to the pandemic and how flexible they were in terms of structuring solutions to tackle this problem. Great. This episode was very, very eye-opening to me. I learned a lot about the Saudi experience from the point of view of an administrator, and I think our audience would also find it very useful to listen to this podcast episode and learn about how administrators and teachers in Saudi Arabia faced, I would say, the pandemic bravely and were able to use that to benefit themselves and their students. So many skills to learn from, so many ideas to keep in mind. And as you mentioned, the takeaway here is that we have to always remember that the pandemic had made us all resilient educators who are always looking for solutions to better the teaching and learning process. And it had also made our students more resilient students, because now they're learning how to become independent, how to become autonomous, and how to take credit for their own learning as well. Is there anything else? Would you like to add anything else before we conclude?
Maybe the last remark about how students grew and matured here in Saudi Arabia, and how much they learned and they developed on the personal level and on the academic level, despite all the challenges, and how much they made use of this big threat and big challenge, and they utilized it, as you said before.
Great. I think this is mainly the takeaway, how it has changed teachers and students, and how this would hopefully continue in the future as well. So at the end of this episode, I would like to thank you so much, Nariman, for your time. I find this very, very informative and eye-opening, as I mentioned. And I'm hoping to be able to talk to you again in the future, perhaps to discuss different issues related to education in your country. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Salma. Thanks.